In today's episode of A Side of Data, we have Hendrik Proper and Stan Hoppenbrouwers discussing about conceptual modeling and how that relates to big data, process mining and BPM. Is conceptual modeling becoming obsolete, or does it have an impact in the world of machine learning and AI? Let's find out. I'm Anton Yeshenko, and you're listening to A Side of Data, a podcast about unconventional side of data science. I interviewed Hendrik Proper and Stan Hoppenbrouwers. Both are computer scientists with a range of interests that overlap in conceptual modeling of information systems and enterprise engineering, enterprise architecture. Hendrik is the head of academic affairs at the Luxembourg Institute of Science and Technology, and he is a senior research manager within an IT innovation services department. He holds multiple positions as an adjunct chair at Radboud University in Nijmegen and at the University of Luxembourg. He also got a few books on enterprise architecture published. Stan is based in Nijmegen as a professor of HAN University of Applied Sciences, while also having positions at Radboud University Nijmegen and at Luxembourg Institute of Science and Technology. Hendrik and Stan are good friends with strong publishing records as co-authors of journal and conference papers and books. We start with a question to Hendrik. What is conceptual modeling?
Conceptual modeling is essentially understanding a domain, and it could be an existing organization, existing context of a piece of software, or it could be a future desired situation, or even medical knowledge, for instance, different domains that are out there that you want to capture in terms of the actual concepts of the domain and their relations. So, for instance, a patient, a treatment, or a policy, a liability, a risk, and all their relationships. Express those relationships and maybe specify rules about them, saying that each patient must have at least, you must know the address for each patient, or know whether a patient is prone to certain illness. Having that kind of information all together leads into a conceptual model. And a conceptual model might then also capture both static phenomena or also processes. So how something flows. I would say that a process model is, for instance, also fundamentally a conceptual model, but it's then a conceptual model capturing dynamic aspects. That's more conceptual modeling to me. Enterprise architecture goes back to the more basic question of what is architecture, and the way I've grown in the interaction to think about architecture is that it captures the way an artifact, such as a building, such as an enterprise, the design of an enterprise, how it captures the essential requirements. And the essential requirements then are the things that are important to the stakeholders. And those might be structural properties of how it can withstand pressures from the wind, if it's a building, or if it's an enterprise that needs to be agile, how the structures of the enterprise, the process, and the IT support that make it agile. And the architecture then has to show how the enterprise meets those essential properties, which sets it apart from regular design, because in regular design you basically need to see all the details needed to actually construct things. And a lot of those details are not necessarily architecturally relevant. And what is architecturally relevant is determined by what is these essential requirements. And that's situational dependent. It's also important for an architect then to identify in situations what is, in this case, architecturally relevant. And tune the architecture to that.
Okay, so this conceptual model in architecture, they're actually intertwined, right?
Yes. Well, I would say that architecture, and also because architecture needs to express in terms of models, architecture then needs to apply conceptual modeling. So architecture is a field that involves a lot of conceptual modeling. Stan and I have worked on the Archimate standards, and Archimate models are fundamentally, by definition, conceptual models. Just like BPMN diagrams, BPM models are fundamentally conceptual models. Question is, are they good conceptual models? But that again depends on context and situation of use. But they are at the basic, at the basis of conceptual models. Don't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. They are descriptions, in a way, of a very specific kind. But they are, in a way, descriptive texts, and they are in the background related to logic.
Yeah.
So they have some sort of semantics underneath, preferably formalized, but that's sometimes that goes too far. And they just help you give structure to the main description. So they are a very neat, structured way of describing things that still leans on natural language.
Yeah.
That's an important thing to say. There are words in conceptual models, like patient and treatment that you mentioned, and they are also building blocks that lean on natural language. So it's a neat combination of working with elements of natural language that have meaning to people just in natural language. And then also logically connected, so there's a more rational feel to it than regular natural language descriptions.
Yeah.
But I'm actually coming from a business process management mm-hmm. perspective. Yep. And there we have business models and business process models, and where there are sequence of steps with decision points in order to achieve some objective yep. of the company. And how would you contrast, for example, your approaches and your interest to this field? To
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I would say that if you look at a process as a sequence of steps, you can, from a conceptual modeling perspective, you can quite logically argue that as soon as you look at one step, one task in a process, that apparently there is some textual description, some fact associated with that thing happening, because it probably means that someone is doing something with something else. So we have an agent, we have a verb, and we have a subject. Otherwise you wouldn't have anything changing. And it means that you already have a concept underlying it, which represents the agent, the actor who does the work. You have a concept referring to at least a subject, a resource, sometimes called resource in some of these approaches, and you have the actual action, which is a verb. And the thing happening is a fact. So they immediately have a conceptual model, in the sense of it leads to elements of the conceptual model, because if you have a sequence of these facts, you have a sequence of facts emerging sequentially in time. And this is a conceptual model with a temporal flow. But when you zoom in on the decision making itself is a task in itself fundamentally, but also may refer to criteria that underpin the decision. If the weather is good, I will not bring a coat. If your credit rating is above a certain level, we will issue this loan without questions asked. That's a rule. That rule requires you to describe what is a loan, what is weather, what is temperature, what's a credit rating. And that's another part of the conceptual model that looks at the more static phenomena of the domain. Because when you look at the process model, there's always some static aspects of the domain, the world of the resources, the world of the observations that allow you to make decisions, as well as the dynamic aspects that spawn the fabric of the actual process. So that's a conceptual model integrated as a whole with two perspectives in it, the static and the dynamic aspect. So to me, as I said, process model is a form of conceptual modeling with at least two parts of it. There's the dynamic aspect, where you see the actual process, and the more static aspects, where you see your resources and other things you need, for instance, to make decisions.
And from a research point of view, I mean, it should be clear that when we say conceptual modeling, we're not into using something new. I mean, we've been doing conceptual modeling since we were living in caves. because when we started drawing on the wall, basically we're drawing conceptual models on how to go hunting, which were early workflow diagrams, but they were already conceptual models, so we're not saying something new. But the challenge is that we produce a lot of conceptual models that need to be connected somehow. They are connected. We need different, more dedicated languages, because looking at what kind of modeling constructs you need in, say, a workflow language, that is a question about what a suitable, more advanced, more compound modeling concept you need in a language to make compact models. That does not mean that those models are not conceptual models anymore. They're still conceptual models. But it's a research question, from my perspective at least, to what modeling concepts do we need for different situations that are effective and useful? And the question of these, especially when you take a natural language perspective, these verbalizations, where did they come from? They don't grow on a tree. Fundamentally, it's the way you look at the domain. And because that starts shaping your conceptual model. But it also then becomes interesting from a research point of view, what happens there when we look at something and start building a model? Because when you look at the same domain as I do, or Stan does, we are likely to produce three different domains, three different conceptual models, even though it's the same domain. Even if we know that the purpose for the model is the same, we still may have our own interpretation. So that's also a question of what happens there, and how to improve that in the sense of how to support it, and how to also allow us three at the table to unify our understanding in an effective way.
Actually, I have one more question. What, with the emergence of these data methods and in general machine learning, I think maybe methods that you're researching are getting
obsolete. That's what you want to say. Yes,
obsolete.
Can you draw some recent real example of how actually would you use it today these methods, and why research is relevant?
Yeah, so how you would use it today, we make two connections, I think, because when you look at especially things like mining of data, big data, then there is potentially dual connection. AI, we need to revisit that as a separate topic in this podcast, but it's a second topic. Going to big data, the data originates from somewhere, sensors. Understanding the context of the sensor, understanding the dimensions of the sensor, the stuff it measures. How are you going to do that without a conceptual model? Because without a conceptual model, it's just a diary of numbers and ASCII. You need to know the context, and that's
I think that you just need to know what to optimize. You don't even need to know the model, what's behind.
Well, but what? How do you express what to optimize?
For example, by the number of sales.
What is sales?
The number of blah blah blah.
What
the number
sales?
Of sales? You
what
just said
sale?
Sales. What is it?
What is it?
The sale is the number of items sold per.
What is an item? When is it sold?
The item is the product of what the company produces.
You're conceptual modeling now.
Yeah, we've just created a conceptual model. You just created your first conceptual model.
You see,
and it sounds like a Mickey Mouse example, but it's fundamental, because when is a product sold? If you go into a company and you have the sales data, when is a product sold? There is an unclear definition in most organizations. Because is it sold when it has been ordered? Or is it sold when it leaves the warehouse? Or is it sold when you have received payment? You will have at least three different answers to this question in an organization. Now, your data, what does it represent? Sold, sold, or sold? Which of the three versions does your data represent?
Just pick one.
Is
it a big difference?
I think the bank that judges your credit rating might have an interpretation that is not a matter of pick one. How much money do you have in the bank? You have invested in the raw resources to make the product, and then you have your product sold. Yeah, nice. Do you have your money? No, then it's not sold. You're not worth credit.
Okay,
so you
just
you can't just pick one. You have to, and this is of course a small game, but in real life, this is a big issue.
Yeah, conceptual modeling is just a means to an end, and the end. So the original problem is data meaning.
Yeah.
And conceptual modeling is one originally handcrafted way of dealing with that. There may be different ways of doing that, but I can assure you that every data expert I've spoken, and I'm not deeply into big data and data mining and stuff like that or analytics, but everyone I speak says, okay, so what's the prime problem in dealing with data and also big data? It is meaning of data. Yeah. Garbage in, garbage out. If you do all sorts of complex stuff, including deep learning algorithms, I don't care. If you don't know what goes in, if you don't know what the simple the symbols, the numbers and letters that go in, the strings that go in, what they mean, if you don't know what they mean, there is nothing to process, really. However, many people seem to think, and I'll easily forgive them for that, seem to think that there is no problem there. Once you start tinkering with it, and even the example Eric gave, that is not such a fictitious example.
No.
That is the stuff that you really start banging your head against as soon as you start to do real data processing.
Yeah.
That's always been the case. Now, there is one difference, one big difference in the use of conceptual modeling for dealing with big data, as opposed to, let's say, good old relational modeling and then creating relational databases. And that is that conceptual modeling also used to be much used and still is for database design. Now, that's something that we sort of have to do without a lot more since we have no SQL-like style data storage, etc. Because you can't do that anymore. You can't do the relational thing all the way. You have to do parallel processing, stuff like that. It becomes a whole different ball game. But the question is still, what does all this mean? So in a way, you actually have a bigger need for dealing with you have more data, bigger data, so a bigger need for dealing with data meaning. The mess only becomes bigger if you don't do this, and then there is a challenge and a question: how do we now apply conceptual modeling to this field if it's not for good old database design, where you also cram the data you have into a structure that is pre-structured by using conceptual modeling? If you can't do that anymore, then you need to do different things. So one approach that you see a lot is that you use conceptual models not for the storage structures, but for creating purpose-specific queries. So that means that you basically model your query, and sometimes you actually involve, there's some generation of further structures involved that helps you create a broader search. Because, for example, if you have this more unstructured, not so relational structure that you want to search in, you cannot play the game anymore of just throwing in a few words, keywords, like you do almost with Google. Like, that works if you have all the algorithms, but the words can mean different things. So you have to expand that. Yeah. You have to do clever things with things like conceptual models, very much related to the phenomenon of ontologies. There is a way, if you look at it from a bit further away, you abstract a bit, then ontologies and conceptual models are quite related. Yeah. They are a different style of describing meaning and the relations between meanings.
Yeah. Now, we now gave the relationship going from big data to conceptual modeling. There is also an interesting other relationship in the sense of a specific class of conceptual models are models that represent the structures of an organization, structures of an enterprise. What happens in an organization, what happens in an enterprise, usually called architecture models or enterprise models. Organizations, companies, government agencies have a need nowadays to show their compliance. They need the ability to analyze risks.
Maybe give us an example. Like a real example.
Yeah, real. So a real example is GDPR compliance. So if you knock on the door of an average organization and ask where is your client data and where is it used, where is it stored physically, where is it used in your business processes, you need some kind of landscape map of your organizational structures and processes to understand what happens in there to be able to answer the question. That's an operational use of enterprise models to answer the questions like that. There are many, many other examples of why you would need such models. For instance, if you are considering splitting your organization into two, then you need to know how to disconnect one department from another department. And how do you do that? What are the interfaces between departments in terms of processes, in terms of shared data? So you need a landscape map of your organization, like a Google Maps of your organization. At different levels. So you need to know the streets, the cities, but you also need to know the plumbing. All these things need to be mapped out. Now, to maintain those maps, you need either a large human effort, people continuously trying to figure out how do our business processes run, what applications do we have in our on a service. Or you need to think about gathering data using all kinds of sensors. And for instance, our colleagues in Eindhoven, around Wil van de Aals, they initiated this whole activity around process mining, which is an example of one aspect that certainly needs to be mined, but there are other aspects as well. So for instance, what is your application portfolio? What applications are running? Because if you want to know what applications might be under threat from security attacks, you first need to know what applications do we have. And how do you maintain that list? Especially nowadays with all these agile methods, you have a lot of bottom-up activity of changing applications. Now, what applications are there? Because at corporate level, you still have responsibilities to ensure that things are secure, that things are compliant. If there's an agile project that starts using a client database, that's very nice, but they use a client information. So there's a GDPR requirement on top of that. Agile or no agile, GDPR compliance. Thank you very much. So you need to be aware of that. Now, that either needs to be done manually, and we know we are all humans, so that's not necessarily the best way to do it, because projects tend not to do that. An interesting perspective on that is that with the means provided by big data approaches, is can we create strategies to mine data that is available in an organization to derive what the structures are, to derive the organizational structures, so derive conceptual models of the organization by having sensors in the organization that monitor the processes, that monitor application usage, that monitor which applications are there, that are treated, used. That probably requires we need to design those sensors into the organization. I know that a lot of the process mining research starts out from process logs from SAP-like systems, ERP systems. But what if we design such sensors with foreknowledge of wanting to use this for actual mining, or at least validation to see if what we think is the landscape map, to validate or invalidate that. Like what you do with OpenStreetMap, you have these apps on your iPhone, and OpenStreetMap, you walk around the city and it automatically validates the correctness of the OpenStreetMap. And you can do that with models of the organization as well. And I think that's also an interesting application of using big data related strategies to support the activities of conceptual modeling, especially in the context of enterprise modeling.
I'd like to add one clarifying note there, which is there's this term metadata. Metadata is simply data about data. So it starts off with, data. For example, you could say, where is it stored? Who is it used by? Which part of the process is it used for? So if you want to say these things about data, then you need the roadmap that Eric has just been talking about.
Yeah.
So you can relate data and you can actually clarify its context in many different ways. There's much to say about data. One particular branch, we've already mentioned, and that's again core conceptual modeling, One particular thing you can say about data is, what does this particular item of data mean?
Yeah.
But that's only one branch. It's a big one. It's an important one, particularly problematic one sometimes. But it's right next to where is it stored, and of what type is it? You know, there's so many things. So if you talk about data management, then metadata is important. Data about data. And that is the link with enterprise architecture and data. And so if you say, maybe you'd say big data doesn't need metadata, but then you're totally lost. You don't have any map about what your data means, and you don't have anything to go by.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes if you get very clear, let's say sensory data, for example, in an IoT context, let's say something simple, temperature from a thermometer, then at least the data is relatively simple. You know, temperature is well defined and well understood, and it's a natural phenomenon, so that's not so hard. However, especially if you get into enterprise modeling, you get into the world of organizations.
Yep.
And then all sorts of more abstract or more human-oriented terms come in and meanings come in, and it becomes a lot harder. So you mentioned the notion of sold, sale.
Yeah.
Another standard example is client. Mm. When is someone a client? I don't know. And
prospects.
It could be a prospect client. Does someone need to have bought something to be a client?
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, there's actual departments fighting over this, because they just say, let's suppose you're in marketing. You say, okay, give me a list of all the clients. Then you actually want to also include prospect clients.
Yeah.
So you get this whole phenomenon of these different things. In health, another example. So we have an academic hospital in Nijmegen. At some point, they introduced a big ERP-style hospital system. It was a huge operation. And that to do that, they had to take all the other systems and all the different departments in the hospital, 20, 30 departments, I don't know. And they need to sort of reconciliate all these terms in order to reconciliate the data flows and the information. And it emerged that there are 17 different definitions of blood pressure around. Because a consultant of internal medicine wants to know a lot more details about blood pressure, and probably even worse for cardiologists. But the pediatricians are not so much interested in that. So they have slightly different things, but the devil's in the detail. And again, if you also should start big data analytics and that sort of stuff, the devil's in the detail. If you do roughly this, roughly sales, roughly patient, roughly client, you get very rough results.
Yeah.
You don't know what they mean. So it's all about data meaning.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll try to summarize what I think enterprise architecture is the means for create, to maintain and distribute knowledge within organization in some way, right?
Within
organizational knowledge, yes. Organizational knowledge.
But for example, you can employ other people and then share this data in understandable form, and also
share that knowledge, yes.
And maybe also upgrade the knowledge, in the sense that if something changes, you can you're researching the methods in order to make this change as cost efficient as possible.
You're absolutely right. It is a form of knowledge engineering, really is. And you do things with them. So in architecture, the things you do are something else. But you need that information. So it's the knowledge of an organization. Well, not all of it, I suppose. You don't need to know how to construct a certain machine or a product is not necessarily part of that. But typically, it's information about the business, how to run it on a slightly more abstract scale.
But it
could all be part of that. It all depends on what you need. So yes, it's knowledge about the organization.
Thank you for listening for this episode of A Side of Data. I will attach the information on how to reach the Henrik and Stan in show notes. In case you have questions, requests or comments, reach me out at Twitter at asideofdata or via email asideofdata@proton.com.